Welcome to Passive Wealth for High Tech Minds podcast. There are lots and lots of IT professionals who work in the industry. These IT jobs are so exhausting mentally, there isn't much time left for such folks to make clever decisions about their investments. Most are unable to put their money in the right asset classes. This is Prashant Kumar from iRealty Gains. I have worked in corporate America in IT and in business organizations for 25 years. My goal is to educate IT professionals like you about the benefits of passive investing. I will be passing my knowledge and will bring guests who have done very well in their careers and can explain the process and advantages of passive investing. So, let's begin. Well, hello, hello. This is Prashant Kumar from iRealty Gains. We are here with an esteemed guest today, Omar Khan. And this is the podcast that we have today is Passive Wealth for High Tech Minds. Omar, thank you so much for your time today. I'm humbled that you are here on the first day when I started recording.
Oh, thank you, Prashant. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. I'm going to introduce you formally. Omar is the founder and principal at Boardwalk Wealth, a Dallas-based private equity firm connecting international investors with US-based multifamily real estate opportunities. Led by Omar, Boardwalk Wealth has managed over $175 million of multifamily real estate transactions. He has advised on $4 billion in capital financing and M&A transactions in commercial real estate and commodities. He's the exclusive advisor for the high net worth families and international entrepreneurs on their US-based real estate portfolio locations. As a CFA charter holder, Omar has extensive experience in valuation across commodities and real estate in three countries. Omar, I'm very impressed by your resume. Overall, I read it, what you sent me.
I think we should end the interview now and we'll end on a high this way.
So the purpose of this podcast, again, as I said, you know, there are a lot of Asians, you know, yeah. South Asians, Southeast Asians who come to United States who work in IT industry, right? Yeah. And you know that IT industry is very challenging. You know, every day is a new challenge in IT.
Oh, yeah. It's people, fast evolving, basically.
Yeah. People think a lot and they code a lot. So their mind is always working, but it is working in the direction on their W-2 job.
Yeah.
When they come out of the job, they are relaxed and that's what happened with me. They do not have time to think, or they don't have the aptitude left to invest correctly in different asset classes, either in real estate or in stocks. Most of them end up investing only in stocks, and you know how the stock market is. I mean, sometimes it's up, sometimes it's down. So the purpose of this podcast is especially to educate those minds and tell them the benefits of passive investing. I couldn't find, you know, a lot of people. I wanted to talk to you to see how you would tell what are the benefits of real estate investing for such high-tech minds.
Look, I think I'm going to start with telling, just saying that, look, the vast majority of the listeners predominantly are high-income earners, right? So we're looking at people whose household incomes are, say, $300,000, $500,000, give or take at the minimum, right? And while a lot of people who are making that money or slightly more, hopefully a lot more than that, they don't feel like they're rich because, you know, they're very high demanding jobs. They've got families, you know, typically the type of people that you talked about are conservative in terms of they don't spend money on stupid things, right? They're saving, investing. They've already immigrated from a country. So they've done all the hard work, right? So they know how much hard work they've done to get to this stage, right? It's a lot of work, right? So what I tell a lot of those people is, this, by the way, is the same story with my brother-in-law. He's not an immigrant, but he's Desi, right? He works at Google. He makes a lot of money. Now, he's very good with his money. They don't spend money on stupid things. But the biggest expense you have on your books, whether you realize it or you don't, as a high-income earning family or a person, isn't your mortgage, isn't, say, your kids if they go to college or a private school. No, it's the amount of taxes you pay, right? And so think about it this way. If you're in a state like California, right? If you're, say, making 400, 500,000, I'm assuming that's you're in the higher, I think around 450,000. don't quote me on that. You're in the highest tax bracket, right? So this means any amount of dollars you make post that bracket, you're going to be paying close to 50% in taxes on that, right? Every incremental dollar is 50. So for instance, if you made $1 million above that highest slab, you're not really making a million. You're making maybe 500,000, right? So you have to start thinking like that. Where is the rest of this money going? And if you're conventionally investing, say just in stocks, and by the way, I personally invest in index funds and mutual funds and all that. If you're just doing that and you're not doing other things, well, basically you have to realize you're not maximizing the potential returns that you can make for your family. And the big reason for that is, look, that the vast majority of the financial advice on offer, by the way, I'm a CFA charter holder, right? It's a gold standard of portfolio and wealth management, right? But the vast majority of wealth or financial advice that's given, look, even the term wealth management, it says management of wealth. That assumes you already have wealth. If you don't have wealth, you have to create wealth first, right? And you can't create wealth by taking the same advice that says somebody who's making $100,000 or $60,000 and doing the exact same thing that they were doing. Because you make 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 times the money. You have a very different set of options available to you. And if you don't take advantage of those options, you don't get into tax advantage vehicles like real estate, you leave a lot of money on the table, right? And this is something, and again, I'm coming back to my brother-in-law example. He knows I do this for a living. He's a pretty financially sophisticated guy. I was in the Bay Area last month, actually, because my wife and kids are traveling. I was in the Bay Area. I was with my brother-in-law. We were hanging out. And during the day, because he's working from home, he was hearing me talk with a bunch of my different investors, similar sort of profile, right? So at the end of the day, we're just watching. I think we were watching TV or a movie or something. So he's like, okay, so tell me about this depreciation write-offs and what are you doing? And again, he kind of knew it in his head, but it's like, you know, when we were talking right before this podcast, we all know, as an example, we have to eat right, we have to exercise, we have to meditate. Knowing is one thing, doing it is something different, right? So he knew about all of these things, but he knew about it, heard about it, put it in the back of his head, didn't really do anything about it, right? So him and I start talking. And I kind of explained, okay, this is what happens. I showed him my tax returns. You see, we make money. This is how much tax write-offs we get. So our tax burden, even though we're making similar or more money than you, we're paying no taxes on that money. And he's like, well, how can you pay no taxes? I was like, well, you get all these write-offs, right? And it got to the point, and this is within a 10-minute conversation, and he's an engineer, right? So he's very analytical. He's a software developer at Google. It got to a point where after 10, 15 minutes, he's like, all right, you know, I'm going to go to sleep, whatever. Next day, he was working from home. He didn't do any work. He spent the whole day making some really complex, fancy model, right? Comes back to me at the end of the day and says, hey, do you want to look at this model? And I was like, no, I don't want to look at this model, right? And he said, look, I basically sat down for the whole day. I knew the answer in the first 10 minutes. I could not believe it. And he said, and I'm literally quoting him. He said, look, because my sister is doing her master's in data science from Georgia Tech, right? She said, if your sister graduates, and unless she gets like, say, a $250,000 job right out of school, which is probably not going to happen because, you know, there's good jobs, right? It is actually worthwhile for her to not do a job, sit at home, become a real estate professional. We still take the money that we're saving and investing. And as a household, we will make more money. You understand? You 100%. Try to explain this to the average person. The average person does not. Well, how would somebody who's going to make six figures, how would that household make more money if the person who was going to make six figures stayed at home and didn't do the job, right? Because we're trained from day one. Do a job, go to work, make money, save, invest. The game is rigged, okay? This is not a conspiracy theory. The game is rigged because if you don't take advantage of the same investments and the same tax breaks that other rich people are taking, you're basically like a McDonald's worker, just with a higher hourly wage.
So in other words, Omar, what you are really saying to the listeners is basically diversify your portfolio. Do not just
just diversify.
Yeah.
Just realize that because you are richer, the universe of options available to you is much different than the universe of options available to somebody who makes one third the money you make.
That is correct. Yeah. So what you are saying is, if you were to save, and by the way, it is not illegal to save that 50% in taxes that those guys pay, you know, in the higher interest bracket, right? It is the code.
This is following the law, but the law is written for rich people.
Yes, law is written for the rich people is that you can say that if you were to invest that money into real estate, you get so many deductions, yes, and you are able to save that much money. I mean, if it is, if somebody is making $1 million and he's paying $500,000 or $450,000 in taxes, if you could save that money,
if you're a high income earner, you make $500,000, live in a state like California, Massachusetts, anything. Let's assume you make $500,000. You're easily paying at least $150,000 minimum in taxes every year.
That is
125 to 150, right?
Yeah.
Think about it this way. Maybe you have that 150,000 to 70. If you save $75,000 pure cash every year for the rest of your life, how different would your life be? Just and 75 isn't even a big amount of money, right? It's not like, Ambani making 80 billion, right? It's not that big in the grand scheme of things, but it's a huge difference.
It's a huge difference for your sister in your example, that if she were to sit at home and become a real estate professional and take all those deductions from your brother-in-law's salary itself, she could probably make more money
as a household could make more money than if she goes out and work. How does that make any sense?
That is true. Awesome. Very good example, Omar.
I know it was a long-winded answer. I just wanted to tell people, because a lot of Desi people are like me.
Right.
We fall into that trap.
They really don't understand. Folks really don't understand, So, I mean, for how long have you been investing in real estate?
I've been doing this by myself with my own money for about 5-7 years. I'm a sponsor. I run and put deals together. Mm-hmm. Luckily for me, the advantage was my family's been in business for a long time. I'm the 3rd, 4th generation. Mm-hmm. Family's fairly financially sophisticated. So I had a lot of exposure to these things. Plus my background is in finance. So professionally as well, I was trained through all these things.
Wow. Tell me, do you still invest passively in other deals, Omar?
Yes, I invest passively. Yes. I also need to get rich, Prashant.
No, that's good. That's a good. I mean, I just wanted to get to the point that passive investing is not just for W-2 earners.
I invest passively in other
people. Yes. I mean, people like you, and of course, I do too. That we end up investing, we have whatever money we have, we end up investing. We want that money to work for us.
Yes.
While we are doing other things in real estate.
Yeah.
I mean, like you are, I mean, I do a little bit of real estate also.
I think you do more than a little bit.
Okay. So in your world, I know that you invest passively. How are you helping others to gain that freedom? I know you are doing it, but I want to hear it from your...
Look, so I can tell you this, when I'm investing in other people's deals, right? Now, typically it's people who are coming from a word of mouth referral from somebody I trust. As an example, I trust Prashant Bhai, right? He'll tell me about somebody, right? I will be more inclined to invest with that person. But my personal, even though I'm in the business, right? I'm in the real estate, I run my deals, we buy apartments all over the world, all over the country, we develop. My filtering criteria is very simple. There's two things I'm filtering for. And by the way, for technical people, it's very hard to understand because you can't build a financial model out of this or a technical model. You can't write a code for this thing. The two things you're assessing somebody for is their level of competence, like, hey, can they do this work that they're saying? And your estimation of their character, okay? And I'll tell you why. Somebody could be extremely competent, but, does not have the right ethics.
Yeah.
That person is a crook.
Yeah.
Conversely, somebody could be extremely honest. They're very nice, extremely honest. They're incompetent. They're an idiot.
Yeah.
That's also not a good use for your money.
Awesome.
So you need to find people through word of mouth, ideally, who are competent and have good ethics. And that only comes with experience. And that comes with asking the right questions.
Awesome. And how are you helping others,
So in my particular work, what happens is I do my own deals. So people invest in those deals. They make a lot of money. For instance, I have a lot of investors. When they are looking to invest in somebody else's deal, even if it's in the same market, I'm in Georgia, Texas, Florida, South Dakota, right? Typically, if they're investing in somebody else's deal, they'll give me a call. They'll send me an email. Hey, what do you think about this guy?
Right.
And look, we're in the business. So we don't know everyone, but we know enough people in our industry. Right. So what I can do is I can pick up the phone, or typically I know the person, but yes, this person's really good. This person's got a really good team. They've got a good track record, good ethics, right? Or, haven't really heard good things about this person. So I'm not going to say something personally, but you should do more investigation yourself. Right. So that in and of itself helps, because now you find out the inside behind the scenes story. Because look, when anytime somebody's trying to sell you their investment, they are going to show themselves as the best person on the planet. Right. So you need other people to help you analyze that situation.
Awesome. So besides tax advantages, what are the other benefits that you tell your investors that they would have for investments in real estate? What are the other things?
So tax is the biggest one, right? Yeah. But look, you have ongoing cash flow. So every quarter, every month, you get cash flow. That's really good. You also have a lot of tax capital appreciation. Mm-hmm. Look, on average, we're getting anywhere from like 18 to 20% annual returns.
Yeah.
Right? On historical deals. Now, that's happened in the past, but that gives you an idea. Yeah. Right? Then on top of that, when we sell an asset, we can do this thing called a 1031. Because think about it this way. You buy shares of Apple, right? And let's assume they go up, you make a lot of money, and let's assume you're selling shares of Apple. Now, if you bought a share of Apple, you sell it, you have to pay capital gains on it if you held it for more than a year, right? In our particular case, when we sell a real estate property, we can choose. We don't have to, and you as an investor don't have to, but you can choose to 1031 with the same person, right? 1031 is a tax mechanism that says you can just basically take all of your money and invest it without paying taxes because you're deferring your taxes.
Yeah.
Right? So that becomes a very powerful tool to quickly multiply your capital.
Tell me a little bit more how 1031 would work in syndication when you have, let's say, for an example, 10 investors in one deal with you.
Yeah.
And they want to do 1031. I mean, they may go in different directions on all.
No, you have to do 1031 with the same sponsor.
Same as,
right? So that's where, right at the start, you know, like I said, screen for ethics, screen for competence. That becomes extremely important right at the start. Because if your starting is not good, nothing happening afterwards is going to save you.
Yeah. So my question here is, can an investor go from one sponsors to another sponsor?
The short answer is, if you're investing 50, 100, 200,000, it's not worth it. Yeah. Technically, yeah, if you structure your affairs and you have a lot of money, everything is possible. This is America. Okay. Everything is possible if you have the right amount of money.
Got it. I mean, so yeah, typically that's what I have, you know, we have seen all the time is, I mean, if you are investing 50,000, 100,000, then maybe it is not worth going through the hassles of doing that tick, you know, tenants in common structure in the new deal. But if you are bringing $500 or $1 million, then maybe a new sponsor would consider that.
Or if you had 50, let's assume I'm doing a deal, right? So we do a deal, you invest money in my deal. Now we sell that deal. Now I can pool all of my investors and go to the next deal. And that can go as it. So you could still invest 50,000 with me. I'm using myself as an example.
Yeah.
You can do it with anyone. You could still invest 50,000 with me. You say double your money. Now it's 100,000. You can take that 100,000, invest in my next deal if we do it in a 1031 way. But what you can't do is take your 100,000, go to somebody else. It's not going to work that way.
And is that something that needs to be done? I mean, in the beginning of the first deal, or it is done at the end of the first deal?
It is done at the end.
So it's not to be determined at the beginning of the first deal, basically. No. That's all I want to clarify.
If you want to go do all of these things, you want to give people money, start is very important, right?
Yeah.
But if you have a bad start, nothing else matters.
Very good. That's a good concept to kind of explain to our listeners that if they want to do 1031. But we are a little bit, I think we are in the beginning stages of explaining what are the fundamental benefits.
The fundamental benefits are tax, cash flow, and capital appreciation. And then the ability to take all of these things and then go into your, and take all of the gains you've made, go into the next deal with either deferring taxes or having enough write-offs that you don't even pay taxes on it. That becomes very powerful because you don't have that capability of deferring or basically not paying taxes with other investments.
Awesome. And how would you rate the mental peace this passive investing folks will get when they invest with folks
100%.
Like you?
I can tell you this. I have so much shanti in my life because, look, I do my business. I do real estate. But when I have excess cash, I invest with my trusted sponsors.
Yeah.
And then they can do their business, right?
Yeah.
I don't have to go do everything in life. It's the same as, you know, we need any service. We go to a doctor, engineer, software. It's the exact same concept.
Yeah. So that is the one thing which I wanted to kind of elaborate here for our listeners. Guys, if you are cutting a check and giving it to somebody like Omar to take care of your money and he's doing the deal for you, all your job is to trust them, give them the money and watch it. You know, they are usually, you know, quarterly meetings or communication about the deal, what is deal performing, and folks like, you know, and syndicators are typically available to answer any questions anytime. But from a doing perspective, it is really a passive investment, so to say, right? I mean, it is really cutting a check and forget about it and just watch the mailbox money coming into you.
That's what it is, right? I mean, you get money literally, I mean, metaphorically, it's going into your mailbox, really it's going to your bank, yeah. Right? But it is mailbox money, right? You didn't do anything, you got the money, you're good to go.
Yeah, you are not there to do the, you're not searching for the deals.
Yes.
Professionals are searching for the deals. Professionals are bringing the deals to you. And on top of it, it is, the deals are managed by professionals.
Yes, so you're that's the most important part.
Yes, that's the most important part. The deal is being managed by the professionals and it is being managed by the professional property management companies. Banks are watching it. Banks wants to make sure the deal has to go through.
Yeah.
There are SEC filings on the deal. So there's no scrupulous things going on.
There's a lot of compliance. There's a lot of regulation. So you know that if you're with the right people, your money is safe.
Awesome. That was the point I wanted to kind of clarify for the listeners. So basically, I mean, give us some examples. You know, what challenges have you faced in your passive investing career, and how have you overcome, if any, you know, anything?
So look, I can tell you this: overcome is hard because when you make a mistake, overcoming becomes a bit of a problem, right?
Yeah.
But the challenges have always been when I have deviated from the formula that I shared with you, right?
Yeah.
When it was somebody new or somebody like, hey, I need the money right now, or otherwise there's not a deal, right? Just let it go, right? Every time you shortcut, every time you don't get good referrals, people you trust and don't tell you the thing, that's when problems have happened. So every time I've done that, problems happen. Every time I followed the formula, have, you know, somebody I trust and no tell me about it, I talk to the person, I talk to them once or twice, get a good feeling or not, by the way, that could also happen, right? And then go from there. Every single time I've done that, it has worked.
Awesome. Very good answer. A very good answer. I mean, the fact is, when you get into in this kind of investing, you kind of start feeling it also. It's not like you're just blindly going and investing with some syndicator. You know, you tend to become part of the community and that's how, and you do the right things at that time. So what has been your, has there been any best moments in your investing career? Any worst experiences, anything you want to share with our folks?
The best moments are like we refinanced a deal. We got 43% of our capital back in like less than 19 months. And we're now cash flowing like 12 or 13% a year, right?
Wow.
Plus it's appreciating, right?
Yeah.
So that's really nice, right? There's another deal, Brighton Farms. We're selling, I'm a big investor in it. We're going to make over like 55% or 60% of on our money in like a year and 3 months or 4 months, right?
Interesting.
So, I mean, you can't get that type of results in a safe, secure environment backed by an asset, you know, I guess unless you're doing something really risky, which this isn't, because this is backed by asset, which has cash flows.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically it is a mindset that, you know, we have a lot of folks, you know, a lot of IT folks who do not have time to think about these things, but at some point in their lives, they have to start thinking they are earning all this money. Yeah. How can this money work for them in a smart way?
Yeah.
Right.
That's a very good way of putting it, actually. How does the money work in a smart way? Not just work for you.
Yeah. Not just you put it in a mutual fund and forget about it for 10 years.
Yeah.
That's not the way. In a smart way where you are not putting too much efforts, but it is still growing.
Yes.
It is still growing and being managed and by the most efficient people and being backed up by the real assets, not just like, you know, some intangible assets like crypto or anything like that. Yeah. I'm not against anything, but I'm just mentioning it. When you open your eyes, what do you see around you?
Look, this is what gives me comfort, right? That, for instance, I'm investing for my children. You know, I have two young sons. For instance, something happens to me, they have something tangible, which they have, which has some meaning and value, regardless of whether it's now or 10 years into the future.
Well, has there been a worst moment, I mean, bad moment in your life, in your investing career, anything?
Yeah, there have been moments where, for instance, I lost a little, I'd say more than a little bit, but not the entire amount of money.
Yeah.
Some of it was avoidable. Yeah. Like, hey, picking the wrong person, which is avoidable because I didn't follow the formula that I was saying. And some of this was unavoidable because, for instance, in Texas, as an example, there was a freeze 1 or 2 years ago. Maybe it's 2 years.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Now that you can't plan for. Those things happen, right? Those are acts of God.
Yeah.
But what you can plan for is choosing the right sponsors who have right contingency plans. And in that particular case, there was some version you could control and some you can control and you didn't.
Very nice. That, I mean, yeah, there are certain things which you can control. I mean, there are certain things which you just cannot control, but that could happen anywhere, right? I mean, I may choose to get in my car and I mean, 99% of the time or almost 100% of the time I get to the destination,
yes.
But there could be a time when I may hit it.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a risk. Yeah. We have to take a risk. Otherwise, if you don't take a calculated risk, you will never make enough money then.
Yes.
So, life is all about taking calculated risks.
Right. So, I mean, that's a very good point you said. And that was my actually next question. What is one advice that impacted your life? And how do you think that advice would benefit somebody else if you have something in your mind?
So, look, the biggest, I my parents, it's not necessarily they gave me this advice. They showed me with their actions, right? Right. That time freedom is everything, as an example, right? If you don't have time, we're working, most high desi people, high profile corporations, they're working in very demanding careers, which
right.
typically means your family time is sacrificed. So your kids grow up, your wife, you may or may not talk to her as much as you want to. And not because you don't want to, it's just because work gets in the way, right?
Yeah.
So my parents showed to me that basically in their allocation of time, that when you spend time with family and when you or rather choose to allocate time with family, you choose to make it a priority, that reap so much more benefits in the long run than say maybe working for that promotion. Because look, eventually we'll all get that promotion. Okay. And that promotion isn't going to be life-changing financially. It's not like you're going to go from 300 to 3 million overnight, right? You'll go from 300 to 330, but they'll give you three times the work, right? So focusing on family, knowing, having time freedom, and then focusing on yourself. Those are very important. Advice is career thing, whatever you want to say, that's the most important thing.
I mean, really speaking, I mean, those who are doing this, and that's just my opinion again, they are actually committing a crime towards their family, you know. Those who are working so hard and just for additional few bucks, you end up getting three times more work. And
because you know this, when you get a promotion, they give you three times more work, but maybe 10% more salary.
Yeah, 10% never happens in the United States, but yeah, it probably happens like 2 or 3%, whatever. But the point is, you are burdened with so much work, you don't have time to think about like your family, about yourself. I mean, we were talking earlier about meditation, you know, like you feed your body, you know, you need to feed your soul also, but you don't have time.
Point.
If you're working 15 hours a day, you are, you know, there's no time for you to do anything. I mean, you are killing yourself. There's no time for exercise.
Yeah, think about it.
Yeah.
People come and in their 40s, they're complaining, I have this ache, I have that ache. They've become fat. They don't take care of it. These things all happen, right?
And these are bound to happen. At a certain age, these are bound to happen.
Yeah.
No, great advice, Omar. Anything else you want to share? You know,
I'd just like to tell people is, look, especially your listeners, you've already done the hard work by coming from your country, working in high demanding, high paying careers, because you had to get a good degree. You had to enter, you had to do all. Look, you've already done the hard work.
Okay? Yeah.
Now you have to learn to do the smart work.
Yeah.
Because hard work got you here. Smart work is going to take you to the next level.
Awesome. Awesome. How can my listeners come, reach out to you?
Well, you can go to our website, boardwalkwealth.com, boardwalkwealth.com, right on in the middle of the right side, there's going to be an email opt-in. Just type name, email, how you found out about us, click the button, you'll get an email, click the link in the email, it'll be added to our mailing list, and then you can know everything we're doing.
Awesome. Omar, thank you so much for your time today. Very much appreciated. The goal again was for this podcast is to teach the high-tech minds what passive investing can do for them, how little efforts are needed by those who invest passively, including you and I, and how we can continue to grow,
yep.
You know, in all aspects.
Thank you so much, Chandbhai, for having me. I'm really appreciative, and you've done a great job in starting this podcast.
Thank you so much, Omar.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. As usual, you can reach me via my website, www.myrealtygains.com, and via email, prashant@myrealtygains.com. I would love to hear from you and talk to you about specific needs you may have. Please schedule an appointment with me via my website, again, www.myrealtygains.com. Stay tuned for next podcast. This is Prashant Kumar signing off for today.